Okay, so let's introduce the team. Fab. So that's me. I'm Ed. I was part of the team that launched TikTok in Europe back in 2018. I've since worked across our content, creator, publisher, and TikTok shop teams. I currently lead the entertainment and news operations team in the UK, Ireland, and Nordics, working with publisher partners like the BBC, ITV, Sky, but also with creators and celebrities, such as Gordon Ramsay, Amelia Dimms, and Manya Chao. We then have Fred Butt, who spent the last year at TikTok orchestrating key partnerships with the BBC and leading on the recent Creator Lab talent development partnership. With a background in digital content strategies for the likes of Discovery, BBC Sport, Disney Plus, and other broadcasters, Fred enjoys being at the intersection of digital and traditional media. We then have Fiona Campbell. Fiona is controller of youth audiences at the BBC for BBC, BBC iPlayer, and BBC Three. Her focus is on launching shows that attract UK under 35 audiences in scripted and unscripted. Her work also involves social media and off-platform journeys that can drive a show's success. For those of you who don't know, the BBC is the British public service broadcaster based in London. BBC iPlayer is the BBC's streaming platform and is home to youth-skewing titles such as RuPaul's Drag Race UK, The Glow Up, the Rap Game UK, Normal People, A Good Girl's Guide to Murder, and many, many more titles. Then we have Stella. Stella's TikTok handle is @stells_press. Stella has spent the last 4 years as an entertainment reporter interviewing the likes of Daniel Radcliffe, Sandra Bullock, and Viola Davis. As well as reporting full-time, she is a pop culture content creator who is recently part of the BBC Creator Lab scheme that we'll be talking about here today. As a self-proclaimed fangirl, Stella has a passion for all things TV, film, fashion, and music. So please welcome our panelists. Welcome, guys. Just before we jump into the questions for the panel, we'd just like to show you a quick sizzle so you can actually see what the panel looked like in real life. So we'll watch that. Fab. Okay, Fred, I think we'll start with you. So maybe if you can just give us a quick summary of the Creator Lab project, what, when, where, and why.
Sure. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me here. First time at South By. Absolutely love it. You can probably hear by my throat that it's been a fun time so far. So Creator Lab is very much a BBC-owned project. It really is a talent development project. So the reason for it was to bridge the gap between TikTok creators and TV and essentially try and build a funnel towards it. So as you saw from the sizzle there, it was 5 cities across the UK, up to 100 creators, and each of those cities were themed. So we had entertainment, we had nature, we had sport, we had food, and we had kids and family. So within each of those, what we call labs, they were very much skewed towards those themes. So we had sports creators at the sports ones, entertainment creators at the entertainment ones, and so on. So they were kind of, they had an expertise in each of those labs. And within that, the BBC then provided commissioners and producers, but also media training specifically for those genres. So it really was tailored to each one. We had a great time.
And which of the glamorous UK cities were the labs taking place in?
So Glasgow was one of them where we had massive storms, and I don't know if anyone's been to Scotland, but I didn't know this, but when there's a big storm, they will just say, we're just going to stop all trains, just every train. And so they did that at 7 p.m. the night before the first lab. So we really started with a bang. We went to Glasgow, we went to Salford in Manchester. We did one in London in our TikTok office, which was great. And then we went to Cardiff in Wales. And then the final one was in...
Belfast,
Northern Ireland. The best one, by the way.
And where were the labs? So you mentioned one was in the TikTok
office in London. Actually, most of them were at the BBC offices, which was great because I think for the creators themselves to be able to say that they were in the BBC offices, to be able to take photos in the BBC, I think they were just like taken back. As you well know, the BBC is very well known. So, yeah, they really enjoyed that.
And why did TikTok want to support this? TikTok doesn't have a TV channel. It's obviously within a mobile app. So why is it important that TikTok would help creators to kind of build their career outside of the platform?
Well, I think on TikTok for, you know, nearly 5 years now, we've really seen so much creativity on the app. And we're always looking for opportunities to champion that creativity and nurture it outside the app as well. And I think, you know, when BBC came to us with this opportunity, it just felt like a no-brainer to provide that extra opportunity for them to develop a career out of their talent and harness that.
I guess when TikTok creators succeed in sort of mainstream media, it helps to raise the profile of
exactly
the platform
that,
as well.
Yeah, and we don't see that. We see this as a mutual beneficial partnership in the sense that those creators who do the labs, you know, hopefully they go on to do some amazing work in TV, but I just don't think they'll stop using the platform. I think if anything, they use it more for promotion and yeah, it's kind of self-serving as well.
Fab. And Fiona, why is your youth strategy at the BBC so important, and kind of how did that lead into this program coming about?
But if I just ask a quick question, are there many people here from public service broadcasters around the world? Yeah, quite a few. Nice to see you. So, speaking to you directly, I think, you know, future talent development and creating, you know, the stars of the future is really important in the public service space. You know, for the BBC, it's an incredibly important priority. And this project was really a large-scale democratic opportunity for a lot of people. Like, we had over 700 applications from right across the UK because we put a huge geographic focus on it, to apply, to go through a very intensive process and get up close to the BBC and have an opportunity to have their content, their voice reflected on our major platforms, you know, our on-demand service, BBC Sport. This has huge reach. TikTok had that same priority of, you know, supporting and driving the creator economy in Britain. You know, creativity in Britain is responsible for 15% of the net exports for the country. It's incredibly important economically for the future of the country. So this was a really great large-scale project to interact with a lot of new creators, some of whom were quite small, some of whom had very large followings at the same time. And within that, again, I would say we had big priorities on geographic spread. So we had people who, not everybody, it's very important not to just have London creators, people from the capital city. Socioeconomic spread to reflect people who were disabled as well as a great priority for us. And it just hit all those targets. It was really great.
Super. And Fred, when the BBC came to you and said, we're thinking of building this program out, you obviously said, you know, something you really wanted to support. But how did you then help the BBC to make it happen and come to life?
There were various different deliverables as sort of part of the agreement. I mean, you know, when James, I have to shout out James, this is very much his project as well, and Mario and the team. When they came to us with it, we were just so excited because the BBC can provide an opportunity that we just cannot. And I think that's really important to say, especially those looking to do something similar, is that, you know, if you do have those connections and ability to provide those opportunities, that was the biggest win for us. In making it sort of come to life, I think the first thing was just reaching out to creators to see, you know, is there an interest? And I remember the moment, we work with a lot of creators, as you can imagine, and we have a team that look after the creators, and we mentioned it to them. You know, their eyes lit up because they're always looking for an opportunity to provide to a creator of what could be next. So really it was about marketing the scheme, and there are various ways we did that. We did that within the app. We created like a microsite within the app where the creators could apply for the scheme through that. We also sort of pushed it out to all of our creator networks, whether that was through managers, agents. And again, you know, the uptake was wild. Everyone just jumped at it. Yeah. And I think, you know, the moment they hear the BBC is sort of bringing commissioners and producers and there's going to be that upskilling element, everyone was just, yeah, over the moon.
And when was that application process?
So the timelines, I think James emailed me in June. We kind of had a conversation before that, and then it moved really quickly, actually, because we wanted to announce it at the Edinburgh TV Festival, and the BBC were sort of leading on that. And so I think around September, October was the application phase, and then the selection happened, and then we were straight into it in January. So, it moved very quickly.
And those labs were in January and February, right?
Yeah, January and February. They was kind of split across it.
And Stella, you went through the program.
Yes.
When did you first hear about it?
Okay, hi everyone. Thank you for having me. And I first saw it being shared on Twitter, X. I don't know what people are calling it these days, but I'm going to say Twitter. And I saw it being shared around in September, and it got a lot of, unlike me, it intrigued a lot of people. I saw a lot of reshares, and I looked at the application, and this really, really spoke to me. And so I was like, let's jump on that before it gets taken away. So I would say around September, October time.
And what was in the application? Like, how do you get considered for a program like this?
I think what I saw in the criteria was that they were looking for entertaining, quick-witted presenters. So I saw, okay, entertaining, check, quick-witted, I hope so, and aspiring presenter. I was like, yeah, that's me. So that really spoke to me on those levels. And I think the TikTok side of it, they said they wanted over 350,000 views on a video or over 50,000 followers. And I was a bit nervous, but on the following aspect of it, but on the views side, I was like, okay, I'm safe there. So, I feel like it was a scheme that definitely applied to me as something I knew that I could do, so I went for it.
Great, and then you found out you got accepted, and how did that feel?
It felt amazing, because it was at a point where I was applying for a lot of things, so when I got the email that I got accepted, I was like, what did I apply for again? I completely forgot, because it was like 2 months later, so when I found out I got it, I felt very excited and felt very proud.
Have you worked with any other media groups or broadcasters in the UK?
I have, yes. So I've worked with ITV on Work Experience, who knows of Love Island? Yeah, I did. Yeah, I worked with Love Island and This Morning, and this was my first time with the BBC, so that was really cool.
Super. Do you feel like other creators that you maybe know or have worked with are also interested in working in broadcasting as well?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think with the rise of Instagram and TikTok, a lot of people are showing off their personalities, whether it's quirky, whether it's comedy. People are showing off what they can do, and they look at that broadcasting space. And because, for example, when I was in university, I thought the road to being a presenter was quite linear. You do your work experience, you get a job at a big company, and then you'll see what happens in the next couple of years. But these days it's taking off for a lot of people, a lot of creators who are showcasing what they can do and getting opportunities because of it. So I think, yeah, the interest in presenting and broadcast is a lot higher than it used to be.
Because it has traditionally been quite difficult to break into presenting and TV. Mm-hmm. So I guess this scheme meant that you could kind of use your digital presence as a kind of catalyst to make that happen, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Super. Fiona, when the applications came through, I think you mentioned that was around 700. What were you looking for?
I think when you're developing long-form television programs, as I'm sure many people here know in the room, you're trying to hit on a very specific and original tone and approach to the subject matter. Something that is going to feel fresh, original, have a revealing line. And it's really hard and can take a long time. And over what we've learned over the past 5 years is that going off platform to look at creators, a lot of them have already tested and learned and really developed their approach to very specific subject matters. So they know their tone of voice, they have found their audience, they've delivered to that audience successfully, and they can prove it through their data on their own accounts. And they have great insights, really respect to them. So we knew that within these applicants, there were going to be people with really great takes that would surprise the audience and feel super fresh for the here and now. And across all those genres, we have definitely found that. The lab's only finished a few weeks ago, and the TV commissioners who met the creators were really overwhelmed by the talent and the opportunity represented by these creators. So, for example, I think it was in Wales, one creator came along with a bag of rocks and she was applying for the nature stream, and she's basically a specialist in rocks. So she came along and just did some... like, that is mind-blowing and very specific, very public service, really talks to, obviously, the BBC specialism in that natural history and science area. Would we ever have found her, or would a single commissioning editor ever have found her? Would have taken weeks, months possibly, to comb through to find her, because this was not about reaching out to the biggest creators, it's about trying to find the most original creators. And just to sort of flip that on as to where this could go to, you know, we work with some young documentary presenters, one called Zara McDermott, who started off in Love Island, another young entrepreneur in Northern Ireland who's a very small following called James Blake. But because on Off Platform they had developed their tone and their expertise, their documentaries have flown in the long-form television space, and they're able to move the conversation around the editorial between off-platform and our iPlayer long-form offering. So it's a really interesting, mutually beneficial, as you said, ecosystem for the editorial.
So I guess, in a way, obviously with those kind of five areas, because they've demonstrated the ability to create ideas and actually make videos, which is essentially the same as will go out on TV, they've kind of shown they have like the credentials to make that initial start.
Yeah, and the expertise, you know, they have genuine insight and expertise, and I think that's what blew away the TV commissioners. And remember, this went from sport, there's many, many kinds of sport that the BBC specialises in and broadcasts in the UK, from like football, athletics, rugby, you know, they were blown away, the sports creators, to food, to entertainment, you know, to natural history. It was a huge editorial spread.
If you're looking for a niche, rocks is pretty good. Yeah. Probably not that many people are going for rocks.
Can I just add that the woman with the rocks, she was so lovely. She was very proud of the fact that she brought the rocks with her in a Louis Vuitton bag. So, yeah, that's how she carries them. It was very impressive, actually.
Yeah, being a creator can be quite lucrative, it seems. Yeah. Okay, and Fred, how were the labs?
Yeah, the labs are amazing. I have to say, like, hats off to the BBC. It was a pan-BBC project, so you had people from studios, from talent works, from public service, and they were such a joy to work with. We were talking about it yesterday, and I think that really makes the difference. In terms of the labs themselves, how they were structured, you sort of had one day that focused on, like, a big welcome and an introduction to the creators, where they got up and got to talk about their content, who they were as a person. And then we had a TikTok masterclass. So as part of our remit, we provided some ambassadors. So these were top UK creators that would come and hopefully have sort of been in the media world as well. And they were able to share that knowledge, but also give some one-to-one feedback with the creators. The creators then split into groups of about five, and they went off to their different workshops for about 2 hours. So one was pitch development, one was media training, one was content capture, and then there was the TikTok clinic, and that was what we delivered on. So within that clinic, we were really just like a real intensive course in TikTok, hearing feedback from the creators, and really trying to sort of elevate their experience and take them to the next level. So yeah, it was brilliant.
And some people might have negative preconceptions about influencers.
Yeah.
Did you find that to be the case?
No, I have to say the creators actually were all so brilliant. They're all incredibly talented, but I think the main thing, the one thing actually, I have to say this, the one thing that stood out to me, when we started each of our clinics, we asked some questions about, you know, why are they doing this? What are their biggest challenges as a creator? And one that really stood out to me was loneliness. And it's because, you know, often they're just shooting, you know, these videos by themselves. They don't get out to meet other creators that much. So when we're in a room with five people for 2 hours, and we're really going through, like, you know, each moment of creating content, how they work with different media partners, and how they can experience, you know, that onward journey. Yeah, it was really interesting to hear just, like, the different challenges that they face.
And Stella, how about you? the creator cohort that you were on. You were on the London one, yes, which was focused on entertainment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What were the creators like?
The creators were so lovely. Like, I wasn't under the impression that I was going to get, it was going to be a very ego-driven space, but you never know. But no, everyone was just so sweet, so down to earth, and just hearing what how people, other creators view content and balancing that with a full-time job, all those feelings and fears that I had, knowing that I wasn't alone and that other people felt the same way. So yeah, it was an amazing space to be in for those 2 days.
And during that lab, there was also a session where some, let's say, like established names in TV, I think it was Munya and Zara, came in to talk to you guys about their journey. Mm. Was that helpful? Was that insightful?
Yeah, that was so inspiring, because both of those people as presenters, I've looked up to, Munya especially, and we're hearing him speak, like he clearly just knows what he's talking about, and seeing Zara as well. I remember watching her on Love Island and see how she's grown into a documentary maker. And yeah, it was just nice seeing that journey, because everyone starts from somewhere. So seeing them go through the no's, the rejections, to where they are now, to how they persist, how they continued going, how they persisted. Yeah, it was very inspiring.
Great. And there was also some like PR training, so yes, helping to kind of prepare for even things like this, but yeah, also, I mean, you work as a journalist yourself, but kind of being on the other side, was that valuable?
Yeah, definitely, because I asked so many questions during the media training bit, especially because I'm used to interviewing celebrities, so I know what sounds PR, what doesn't. So hearing like what the process behind the scenes of how it works, yeah, it was very interesting to me. And also we got given an exercise to interview somebody and ask a question that could potentially throw them off, and given pointers on how to answer it so you don't land yourself in trouble, so you don't get cancelled. So yeah, very, very interesting.
Good to hear. And Fiona, from your perspective, like, how did the creators do when they were there? What were the kind of things you were looking for? Obviously, you've seen their digital presence, but like in real life.
It was a really good, open, positive vibe. Like, you can imagine it's quite intimidating to be thrown into 48 hours with a lot of BBC, National Television Commissioners, a lot of other creators who you don't know, representatives from TikTok. It's a very intense experience. But we really worked hard to try and make it a relaxed environment and to emphasize, look, when you stand up and you do your pitch, when you stand up and introduce yourself, you know, we were trying to have fun with it and, you know, just bring down the oxygen level of it. So I thought it was, and I kept on at checking in with people, and there were some people there with, when I was in Belfast, from a neurodiverse background, and I was thinking, this is really overwhelming. So there was a lot of checking in that people were you know, dealing with the schedule and the pace of it well. So that was really important for us. So, and I think actually the television commissioners also find it quite, they couldn't, because this, we haven't done anything like this before. They've probably never been in a space with so many content creators at once. And I think they were challenged in terms of what they could do with these new presenters. And that was really, really, really great to see.
And those commissioners, they produce TV shows, but also coverage online, social content. They're generally quite difficult to get access to, right?
Yeah, because, you know, we make an awful lot of content, and these are the people who constantly have shows on air, constantly shows in the edit, constantly dealing with press, legal issues, etc. So it was great to have sort of, you know, each of them came for a day each, to kind of take time out, get away from their workstations, get away from their edits, and know they're there to spend that intense time meeting creators, you know, having coffee together, lunch together. And they really enjoyed it. And we know from the feedback, as I say, we only finished it 4 weeks ago, that their brains are working, and the opportunities are already formulating for how they're across sport, food, entertainment, nature, children's, the opportunities are going to happen. We can see that because they're already formulating in their head, oh, we could use them in one of our children's magazine shows. We could, you know, the food the chefs can have a segment in our morning television shows. You know, like we have morning TV in Britain, which is a huge platform. It's one of the most successful shows the BBC runs in the UK. So we can see it already crystallising into firm opportunities, which is really great.
Yeah. Great, and we'll talk about those a little bit more. But Stella, I'd like to hear kind of what were your sort of key takeaways from the lab?
I'd say it really, in terms of like my comfort zone, it really threw me out of it, but in the best way, because for the entertainment, we had to pitch for Eurovision, and I wouldn't say I'm the biggest like Eurovision fan. I didn't know that much about it, and I thought I was going to be surrounded by like Eurovision fanatics, and I was going to stand out. But I was able to kind of like use that to my advantage, I guess, when it came to delivering the pitch. And after delivering it, I remember thinking, this time like 2 years ago, I could never have done something like that, like confidently almost, and almost sell it in a way that was believable. So I would say my main take was like growing in confidence, knowing that if I am in a room, and if there is an idea that I want to do, even whether it's going to be executed well or not, if I believe in it, I can sell it well. So I would say that was a big takeaway from me.
Actually, there's one thing I forgot to add as well, just off the back of that. Within the pitching panels, we also invited some of the independent production companies who we would contract to make television programmes. And what was interesting to watch, so again, the creators weren't just meeting BBC commissioners, they were meeting the producers who commercially make our content. So that was another networking opportunity. But on top of that, what we've noticed is some of our regular producers, because they tracked this in the press, are requesting the list of the creators who were on the scheme. And we actually published that anyway on the BBC homepage. So just by being a participant in the scheme, already the national sector is going, we need to meet these people, which is really great, you know?
And Stella, what was your pitch for Eurovision?
So I think I started it off by saying, I've got a confession, I've got Eurovision FOMO. And that immediately kind of like glued them in, I guess, because they're like, okay, where's this going? So I said I wanted it to be a journey about me learning about Eurovision, because I feel like I've been in the entertainment journalism space for about 4 or 5 years. Eurovision sounds like something I would like, but I just have, it's just one of those things I never switch on, but I know everyone talks about it. It grows in viewership every year, doubles, triples, and yet it's never really hooked me. So I wanted to make it like an educational series of like meeting people. Like, for example, if there was a couple that met in the Eurovision crowd 30 years ago, maybe this year they're celebrating their 30th wedding anniversary, something like that. Get real like real life stories from it. And by the end of it, will I convert to a Eurovision fan? TBC.
Okay, nice. Who knows? It's like a clear story there.
Exactly.
And I guess that's a journey that, whether that goes out on social or TV or even radio, that's a journey that like other people will be going through, right?
Yeah, definitely. Because I feel like I'm not the only one. I'm sure there's many others that when I ask them, like, what do you think about Eurovision? I think the common response I hear is, I don't really get it. I don't really know yet.
In fact, I feel like that piece of content would be really popular in the US, because whenever I speak to my like US friends and colleagues, they're always trying to like figure out
what's going on.
So wait and see.
Exactly.
Okay, fab. And Fiona, so you mentioned some of the creators who've been through this project will have the opportunity to actually work for the BBC. Can you tell us like a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so sport, as I said, we have a lot of rights to national and international sports events on the BBC Sports platform. So, and we're always looking for digital reporters for those events, to work in the run-up to or the live moment of those sporting activations. So there's going to be many, many opportunities in the sporting arena. And there was, for example, a woman who lives in Wales who is a postal worker, you know, who delivers letters. And she was really great and real expert in the field of rugby. And sport were really interested and really excited to meet her again. And she's not from Cardiff, which is the main city in Wales. So sport were really excited. They would never have come across her. It would have taken, again, hours and hours and hours, days, weeks of combing through to find her. So sport is going to be a great area. Eurovision, which is this Europe, you know, well, I think there's 60-odd countries, Europe and beyond songwriting competition, which is huge. So it's a huge live song performance moment in May. Again, there's an opportunity for a digital reporter behind that, so that's a great opportunity. In the nature space, we do a lot of nature programming, programs called Country File or Spring Watch, Winter Watch. And again, to be a reporter within one of those shows, these are shows that are watched by like 3 million, 4 million, 5 million people live before we get into the on-demand service. So you can see already for these creators, the potential is they're going to go from their audience to, boom, a multi-million audience. And that is super exciting. And we also had the children's magazine program, the children's area, and in the area of cooking, we had some fantastic applicants in the area of cooking. So like a mini cake baker, which has had massive success. And that's, again, not something that would probably naturally come forward in the national team's editorial. So when you've got a national programming team, they haven't got much time because they're doing a weekly show. It's quite hard to think of something, a highly engaged niche on which to report in within your show. It takes a lot of time, but these creators have proven success with their audience in that area, so we're kind of supercharging what they bring, like mini cake creation, Chinese cookery in Scotland, and bringing it to the national show's audience. Yeah.
And when creators are in front of these commissioners, what are some of the simple things they can do to sort of to stand out?
I think it's probably the clarity and a really succinct pitch. And to be honest, a lot of the creators have that naturally because they have to make successful, engaging videos. That's their day in, day out. They know how to get into a story quickly. They know how to keep it moving, and they know what the focus is. So I think it was obviously a learning process to suddenly be confronted by TV commissioners and having to pitch live in front of them. But, you know, they had the proof of their concept already in their video. So it was great to bring them all together. And I know it really, for those TV commissioners, it really has got them thinking in a different kind of way, as we know by all these opportunities that we're trying to crystallise at the moment.
Great. And I guess one of the other things, and kind of speaking from experience working with creators quite a lot, is having like a really positive sort of attitude, being very proactive. But also, I think for any kind of creators, just being like easy to work with makes like such a big difference. You know, being polite, being courteous, showing up on time, that kind of thing like goes a long way, doesn't it?
Totally. Showing up on time, definitely, when the clock's ticking and the money's being spent, as people in this room will know.
Yeah, I think one of the feedback that came back in every single session was just reply back to the email, which seems so like basic, but you know, that's the thing. I have to say, Stella was very good at this. She came and grabbed, you know, each and every one of us and just said, oh, can I just have 5 minutes? And we didn't realise that she'd done it to everyone. And pitched herself so well. I was just so impressed, and it was brilliant. And that is, you know, one of the reasons we were like, we want to bring a creator out to South By to talk about their experience, and Stella stood out for us.
Always shoot your shot.
Yeah. Love that. So Stella, what's kind of next for you? I mean, you still work like full time alongside being a creator, but what would you say is your long term goal?
Long term, definitely, I'd love to do a lot more reporting. The way Amelia de Moldenberg is killing it right now in the reporting space, I'd love to do that, but just minus the chicken. But yeah, I'd love to like go to events like the Oscars, the Golden Globes, the BAFTAs, and just do a lot more reporting, editing my own work, and do content creation on the side, because I love the balance. I love doing both, but I don't know if I could commit to just doing one. So yeah, I'll be greedy and have both.
Good for you. Aim high.
Yeah.
You've obviously met lots of like celebrities, Sandra Bullock, to name just one. Do you ever get a little bit sort of stage fright? Or
I do. Honestly, when I see them like moving closer on a red carpet situation, and I can see them, okay, they're speaking to one person, they're getting closer, I feel it. I'm like, the fangirl in me just wants to like go crazy. But as soon as they step in front of me, it's like, boom, professionalism takes over. And like, I'm like, contain my nerves. But as soon as they go away again, I melt down.
And I mean, we've kind of touched upon some of the things that you learned, but how well has it kind of prepared you to start, like, let's say, that journey towards, you know, becoming the next like Amelia de Moldenberg?
I'd say there was so much, especially in the TikTok masterclass, that I learned that I didn't know before. And for example, you spoke about how going live actually does work better for your content. And I've been on the app for a good 2 years. And I was like, I never knew that. There were so many things. I just thought, okay, this would really help benefit me for the future. So I'd say even the media clinic and just learning about media training, what to say, what not to say, as well as how to pitch. Because as a reporter, I also want to be a TV and radio presenter. So it's also given me that confidence boost to be in rooms where, and to say things and deliver things and pitch things I never thought I'd be able to do, and to do it well. So I think it's given me just the greatest confidence that I didn't think I had.
Fab. Well, that's what we were hoping for.
Yeah.
And Fred, kind of from a TikTok perspective, how do you define the success of a program like this?
I think two things mainly. The first one is, you know, the creators and their experience. We wanted them to have an enjoyable experience, but one that they came away, exactly how you've just said, feeling like you've gained something from it. And really, it's in the opportunity that comes out of this now. So already we're seeing so many opportunities. I think some of the sports creators got to go work with Aston Martin, and some went and worked with one of our football soccer teams. And I think, yeah, seeing those opportunities, they're the real wins. You know, those case studies of this person did Creator Lab and now they're off presenting, you know, Blue Peter or Springwatch. The second thing was the BBC to us is a really valued partner. They're one of the biggest partners for us in Europe.
Just on that, we obviously talked about talent development here,
yeah.
But when you're talking about partner, that's like within the platform itself, right?
Yeah, so... you know, the BBC have over 35 accounts with us on TikTok. And so we really value them. We value the content they bring and also their expertise and everything else. So when we do partnerships like that, it's really making sure that the BBC are happy and they feel valued in the partnership as well. So it really did feel like a real good match on this one, I think, just given, you know, the creators and then the TV opportunity. So, yeah, it's been brilliant.
And do you think this is something that... like, you know, other markets, whether it's in Europe or here in the US, could kind of replicate something like this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I said earlier, it's all about the opportunity and how those kind of frameworks are built. But we're seeing it more and more every day, casting directors coming to TikTok saying, do you know of creators who do this? Or producers saying, do you know any experts who create content around this? And I think there is a real appetite at the moment for creators who have the ideas and a lot of them who have a big following that they want to harness. So I definitely think it's something that can be explored in other markets.
Is there maybe a perception that, whether it's in TV or film, you can just pick up creators and drop them into shows and really use them as like a marketing tool? Do you think like that is effective, or is it more effective to think I'm going to harness this person's like creativity and build around them?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think it's very easy to pick a creator who has, you know, 20 million followers and just stick them into a TV show and hope that you get the numbers. And I can't really speak from a TV point of view, but I do think that you really need to harness them. You need to make sure that they're aware that their platforms are also a promotional tool, because often you'll see big creators in a TV show and then they won't publish any of that content or promote it on their channels. And that's a massive opportunity missed, because they've been selected because of their following. So I think, yeah, I don't know, Fiona, if you've got something to add on that.
Yeah, I agree. It's... you know, everybody should be beyond this, just take somebody because they've got a big following and that's going to work for my long-form TV show. It just doesn't work like that. You have to, you know, the way we think about it is you have to respect that person's editorial input and engagement, and that's what they have success on these platforms with, and that's what you're trying to lever further into long-form content. And then the people that we work with who are already making long-form content, like I've mentioned Zara McDermott, who's worthwhile looking up on Instagram or TikTok now if you're sitting here, because she's put out a documentary 48 hours ago on our streaming service. And because her engagement on her TikTok, Instagram platforms driving the editorial of the long-form show on our streaming service is so good, so in-depth, so... it's just got loads of value in it, because she's sharing the editorial, what she was thinking when she was shooting, who she met, how she approached it, how she, in an education term, how she developed the idea. what she did in the edit, what's it like being in an edit? There's an awful lot of education value to media students and to young people to engage in our sectors within that. But she's doing all that off platform on Instagram, on TikTok. Zara McDermott, I'll say it again, because she's doing it live at the moment. And we have seen that show in the last 24 hours took off. Anybody who works, has anybody put their stuff on a streaming platform here? There must be, yeah. Yeah, anybody who works in a streaming platform, you will know day one, day two are the hard days to lift the show out of the platform algorithmically and get big numbers to it. It's hard, but if you work with someone who gets how to share that genuine content off platform, we saw her shows just go boom because she's doing it so well and successfully off platform and authentically. It's not marketing, and it's not just her publishing a set of assets we gave her. It's her genuine investment in the production of that show.
I think, sorry, just to add on that really quickly, that element of trust in the creators, I think, is so important. And it goes all the way down to creating branded content as well. What we found with the creators, when they said they worked with people from marketing, from different brands, they weren't really trusting them with the script, how the video is. They just wanted to harness their followers. And what you'll find is, the moment it feels like an ad, you lose all engagement and you lose any sort of traction on that. So I think, yeah, having faith in those who have created a following themselves, I think, is super key.
And so it's really about sort of supporting them through that like creative journey as the show is being made. Obviously, this is a little bit maybe further down the journey for some of the creators, but I think it's important to say so that actually their audience, though, is really engaged with their social presence, is kind of almost anticipating or excited for that launch because they feel like they've been a part of the journey sort of right up to that point.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, fab. And so Fiona, kind of broadly, the talent that were through the lab, it wasn't so much about the numbers that they were driving on the platform. It was really like who they are and what kind of creativity and execution they could deliver in person.
Yeah, it was about their passions. And like I go back again to the lady with the rocks and the Louis Vuitton bag. That's a very specific passion, but which aligned really well with BBC's natural history content. But the amazing thing is they could show to us how their passion, no matter how niche you may think it is, really had an audience and a fan base out there. Like, that is incredibly valuable. And is also very surprising to us. And if you work in TV, you don't often you sit in rooms and you're thinking, I'm not very surprised today. There were some very surprising editorial points emerged. Like, and I go back to the post lady from Wales on rugby as well. They were, I think, very surprised by her too. And then I would add on top of that, just to re-emphasise to people in here who work in the public service space, there's layers of magnifying the benefit of what we do here. It's much more than just a talent scheme. So, you know, it was a scheme that brought forward from 700 people who had to interact to apply down to 100 creators who got to meet national television commissioners. And on top of that, they then got the whole BBC press machine behind who they were. So if you look BBC Creator Lab up on the BBC website, they're all named, their handles are all given, their images are all out there, professional portraits were taken of them all. That was then supported within the TikTok app in terms of their success. And as I say, British production companies who spend their own commercial money and resources are picking up on them and thinking the BBC has backed and selected these 100 creators. They must be worth listening to and paying attention to and working with. And then on top of that, whenever the brand partners of the TikTok are looking for people, TikTok can say, well, actually, I've been through a BBC selection process against these 100 creators. Like, there's an awful lot of economic magnifying effects in that if you're a public service broadcaster. From one, it took a lot of work. James and Marielle here from my team, drove it. It's a lot of work, but it really delivered, and we did it at great speed. So from June, and it was all, concluded in the first days of March.
Yeah, so kind of like a six-month sort of turnaround. Yeah. Fab, I think, maybe just kind of my final observation is, One of the things that at TikTok we're really proud of in terms of our product is lowering the barrier to entry to create like great video, and that's because we provide like a great editing suite within the platform, loads of other tools that make it really, really easy to make video. And what is so great is to see that now that kind of democratic content process is actually allowing people who maybe haven't previously had the opportunity to break into traditional media because they didn't have like the education or the resource, actually now can get noticed by major media. I mean, BBC is probably the biggest media organization in Europe, one of the biggest in the world, and have these like great opportunities. So for us, that's really great. It's something we're really proud of, and I think everyone here on the stage is like really proud to be a part of this. We'd like to open the floor to a Q&A. So feel free to line up to ask questions. I think just before we start, we're obviously aware that TikTok has been in the news quite a lot over the past few weeks. With regards to that, we won't be talking about that today. So we'll really only be taking questions with regards to talent development, the BBC, kind of the TikTok app more generally, and this specific program. So thanks for respecting that. Just before you ask, if you could please state your name and organization, that would be great. We only have 10 minutes, so we'll try and get through as many as possible. Thanks.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Khalil Green. Thank you so much for the panel. So I'm a full-time content creator, mainly on TikTok. I actually create content about history and politics, and I've been doing this for a while. I was even invited to be one of 30 creators that went to the White House to be briefed on the Ukraine war when it came out. However, a week after that happened, Saturday Night Live, the comedy show, did a skit mocking us as creators for this entire provision. So my question is, with so often people seeing TikTok or seeing TikTok creator as a form of illegitimacy, how do you guys go about adding a stake and saying that, no, that these creators are journalistic, we have journalistic integrity, we have critical thinking approaches to how we report, because that's something that I face difficulty on, no matter how big my audience is, no matter how good the quality of the content is.
Well, I think firstly to say, like, that sounds like a shame that that was to happen. I would hope the BBC wouldn't, like, putting that aside, I think the process and actually the fact that, as Fiona was saying, out of 100 creators, probably something like 20 or 30 creators will actually go on to work for the BBC in some form, really, like, shows the legitimacy of creators and how they can move into that, like, area. So I don't think, you know, as a platform, there's really much we can do more than that, other than really trying to facilitate these opportunities through programs like that.
I would say, come and say hi afterwards, first of all, and then. But I would say, go through what we've published in relation to this program on BBC websites, and when you reach out for opportunities on events you're going to in your area, I would make sure you show this and say, look, editorially in the areas of like natural history we were focusing on here is probably most relevant to your area. You know, the BBC are doing this and respecting these creators' editorial voices, because you probably have some editorial partners that you regularly work with or want to work with.
Want to work with, yeah.
Yeah, and you should push this to them. Like, literally, we've only launched the press on the 100 creators a couple of weeks ago, so that's why we want to talk about it, because we want to get it out there as an important model, because I do, and I hope it's come across in this talk, but the whole point that this is successful and why the BBC wants to do it is that the editorial voice of these creators is incredibly special and high-end and has expertise, especially in these factual areas you're talking about in relation to yourself. So I think you should try and use this example within the partnerships and the opportunities you're trying to take advantage of yourself. I think it's a real shame that people took that tone, to be honest. It's pretty disrespectful.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. Also, I'm a US TikTok creator, so if anyone wants to talk about the ban and why I'm against it, I'd be happy to talk about that later.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you so much for this panel. Very insightful to get a peek behind the curtain. My name is Sharinda Simmons. I'm also known as the PTO Nomad. I create content about history based in the beauty-centric angle, and I'm actually a broadcast news journalist as well. I do travel content for women in the workforce. So I had a question about this type of program, this type of setup. I noticed that travel wasn't necessarily integrated into that, but do you foresee having some kind of room or structure that could be a strategy in the future for projects like this?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we evolve, the program will definitely open up to other verticals, but the ones we do will probably align to that year's opportunities in the longer form television sphere. That's the way, in business terms, to make things happen, it will go. So we wouldn't know yet, but yeah, we're going to evolve the areas as we move along. Yeah.
And so you can foresee it, like, even if it's being, like, in a field or being out in the field, you can foresee it even working in that kind of infrastructure.
Oh, God, yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely. I could, yeah, definitely. James is nodding.
Travel is a huge massive part of the TikTok ecosystem as well. And it's just, like, a huge part of, like, culture and society. So, yeah, I think there will definitely be opportunities in that area.
Perfect. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for your impressive discussion. I'm from Japan and I work in manga industry.
That's exciting.
Thank you. I'm interested in BBC Creator Lab scheme. It's very effective, and I think many traditional company and media are struggling for reach young audience, young user, our company too. So my question is, please advise us, traditional companies, how traditional company reach and attract young user and young user effectively.
That's really interesting because we're very interested in anime and manga. I would say if there's a parallel to traditional manga production companies and long form linear TV companies, you know, though traditional manga companies could run a scheme like this and ask creators to pitch a character for an existing long-form strand they've got going, like for a new character to bring in a new storyline, it's the equivalent of, you know, the chef having the insert in the morning TV program. So I think that's a really, really interesting idea. And then those traditional manga companies could leverage, you know, the next generation of creativity and the type of editorial stories they want to tell. So I think that's a really clever idea, clever thought.
Thank you.
Hi, I have two little questions, very little. Thank you for this panel. It's been for me very, very important. I have a digital media outlet in my country called Snack Report. In this media, we talk about trends, memes, and we are start managing talents. And I love BBC and TikTok as well. It's clear to me that with this alliance, BBC gains new talent and new creativity energy. But what does TikTok get out of this? TikTok is already a mature platform. It seems like it won't need validation or partnership with traditional media. That's my first one. And the second, are these talents from the lab, once they enter the BBC ecosystem, they are managed by BBC, in other words, as influencers?
I'll take the first question quickly. So I think I mentioned it earlier, actually. So yes, being associated with the BBC, brilliant. You know, we love the BBC. They are one of the biggest broadcasters in the world, essentially. But we really value that onward opportunity for our creators. Our creators make up the content ecosystem. So any way that we can provide an onwards opportunity, whether that's through TV or anything else, it really does benefit us as well, and we want to support that. and also sort of help them develop the next stage and make a career out of it as well. So I think that's where the scheme really helps with that.
Just to add, sometimes you'll see someone on TV, or maybe even at South by Southwest, and someone will say, oh, I know that person, they're from TikTok. For us as a platform, that reinforces the value that we offer, which is, if I'm creative, I make great videos, I post them, I can kind of achieve my goals and gain that sort of recognition. Does that answer your question?
Perfect. Thank you.
And what was the second question?
It was about the representation. No, so we don't... some creators will take on their own agent. You know, so they're free agents to go and be represented by whoever they are. We don't manage them directly. We will just engage them in a business contract on a specific commission, just like regular workers, yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. My name is Austin Evans, and essentially, we are building technology out in Stanford that's centered around like digitizing word of mouth for Gen Z and focusing our technology on that specifically. One thing in TikTok, so TikTok ads, phew, man, shout out to TikTok. But I wanted to ask about what you spoke about to the algorithm, right? Those first 2 days, I really wanted to think through or ask about what are the strategies or things that you set up when you're thinking about how to overcome these first 2 days, and how do you kind of, I guess, mobilize your network or BBC's resources or data to be able to solve
that? Yeah. I mean, if I knew the clear-cut answer to that, I'd be... I don't know what I'd be doing. We're always trying to figure that out because obviously no algorithm's perfect. I would say the key learnings for when I do see it working. So another creator, James Blake, who's an entrepreneur, he's not really a creator, he's more an entrepreneur, and he had a very small following. He managed to have a similar effect, I noticed. And really the best learning I can share is in the run-up to the show's release, they start discussing. We don't organize it with them. They just decide, this is what I'm going to share about the show that's coming. This is what the show means to me. This is what I experienced. This is what editorially is incredible about the show. That then starts some sort of mobilization. They then do that very intensively on the day of release and subsequent to that. And they also reflect, obviously, the interactions they're getting from their followers who start watching the show. And the people who are most authentic, most honest, seem to have the greatest success. But it definitely can work when they are, as I say, just very honest. So they're honestly sharing their passion about what they loved about producing the show, editing the show, or what was the scary bit. Some of it's a bit scary. But if you learn anything more about algorithms, please let me know.
Okay. And so that's... Yeah, okay. I'll leave alcohol.
Come and find me. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Julia Wezio, and I'm a marketer in the video games industry right now. And so I wanted to ask, just as a brand, what is the best thing that you can do, or the most important thing you can do to support creators that are doing advertising for you, maybe through UGC content or through sponsored content? If there's like one key takeaway you can offer.
I guess respect their process and really listen to their ideas. Because I mentioned it earlier again, it's just like they've built followings from doing their own thing. And I think a lot of the time it's a one-way conversation when they work with a brand or marketing, where marketing will tell them, no, this is the script. You have to say these words. You have to say it like this. And actually you see as soon as they start doing that, the engagement drops off and their followers don't really understand it. So we always say make TikToks, not ads, because essentially if you're scrolling, you can smell an ad straight away. But if the creative's right, it feels like that creator's really invested in it. So that would be my takeaway from that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
No worries.
Hi, my name is Catherine Cook. So I represent talent in the film and TV industry. I've been doing it about 4 years, and I've been attempting to kind of specialize in digital media, traditional talent crossover, but I've been met with a lot of skepticism in the traditional media, and I'm starting to see a few creators break through to the other side, but there's also a lot of pushback from people in the traditional industry. So it seems like you guys in Europe are a little bit advanced. I was wondering if you have any tips on how to convince the naysayers.
I mean, from my point, I think if you can find the right creators for what it is that you're trying to do, it's leaning into their expertise. I do think there is a stigma around creators or TikTokers, but if you actually then just move past that and look at the content that they're creating, you can see that the talent is there. But a lot of traditional media, well, not a lot of traditional media, but a lot of people will hear TikTokers and be like, no. But try and, they just need to move past that label and look at the content, and hopefully they'll see the talent there.
Yeah, I think, you know, TikTok grown and developed very quickly over the last few years. 3 or 4 years ago, probably pre-pandemic, most people hadn't heard of it, and those who had thought it was just teenagers lip-syncing, dancing on the platform. Now the content ecosystem is completely diverse, and you can find more or less anything there. So I think the proof points will be the successful case studies, and I know it's difficult, but probably in 2 or 3 years, lots of the biggest names on TV will have started out on platforms like TikTok and the other the social platforms. What this program isn't trying to do is take like the news anchor and push them out with like a TikTok creator. It's a slow process where they're actually having some quite like exciting but sort of entry level opportunities, and then they get to build their portfolio with a media group like the BBC, but also importantly like those relationships that will help them to progress. So I guess part of the answer is just like be patient because it will work.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, but feel free to come grab us at the end. Mm-hmm. Just quickly before we finish, I want to say a massive thanks to Fred, to Stella, to Fiona. Also to James and to Marielle from the BBC team who helped deliver this. Thanks South by Southwest, and thanks all of you. For-